Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And now, the Instigators.
We don't even know where to begin today. So I guess we'll just start right here. You heard it here first. I don't know about Riv, but I'm the kind of guy that loves to say I told you so. Number one, I said Tampa Bay will not win the Stanley Cup. I don't know which end of the playoffs they get eliminated, whether it be at the start, the middle, or the end. And I also picked Columbus. I know you started it last week. We did our little, I have our results right here from our, we picked Columbus. You heard it here on the Instigators.
I didn't pick Columbus.
Who did you pick?
I said that I believe that Tampa Bay is an absolute powerhouse. It's one of the best hockey teams we've seen in the last 15, 20 years. But I had a but beside that. Columbus Blue Jackets had played exceptionally well down the stretch. They went 8-1-1. This team went out and they got some big boy hockey players, getting Duchesne, getting DeZingle. They picked up the defenseman that for depth in McQuaid. And they added to an already very deep lineup. And this team took a little bit of time. The first couple weeks after the trade, they weren't gelling. They did not look very good together. They weren't gelling. But as time went on, they really started to play well together. And this team is extremely dangerous. They can go out and they can match the offensive output that Tampa Bay has. That's what makes Tampa Bay so successful, is they're extremely deep throughout their lineup offensively. But right now, Columbus Blue Jackets seem to be that team, you know, with Duchesne, with Panarin, with Dubois, Atkinson. You just name it. You just keep going down the line. They've got a lot of offensive talent on this hockey team. But the other thing that Tampa Bay is having a real tough time with is this Columbus team. They're heavy, they're big, they're solid, they're very physical, and they play.
Yeah, but that doesn't win games, right?
Yes. Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
What do you mean, there I go? So what am I? What, you think I'm starting something here? Am I instigating?
Listen, I mean, they play fast. They play heavy, physical hockey. They all play within their system, and this is a very, very tough team. I mean, right now, Tampa Bay is, they don't have an answer at all. Like, there hasn't been a point in this series where we saw that turnaround. We saw that, you know, the reasoning for Tampa Bay getting 128 points this season. Right now, as far as I'm concerned, I watched every minute of this series, and it just looks like Columbus is just continuing to build confidence. They play within themselves. They're very structured defensively. They do a really good job. But I'm going to tell you, this team offensively, they are very, very difficult to play against with how big and fast they are. So this, I think Tampa Bay's in tough.
It's huge. I mean, what we're seeing is huge. And there's so many other stories in sports right now, especially hockey. I mean, Nazem Kadri, he's going to have a hearing, in-person hearing today for his cross-check to Jake DeBrusk. I think Jake DeBrusk is a conversation in itself. With the way he's been playing, there's a coaching search going on. News about Todd McClellan moving on from the Sabres, or Sabres moving on from him, or just reports are that he's not going to be the coach of the Buffalo Sabres. So We'll talk about that. But I don't know what the bigger story is in sports right now. I mean, if I don't know if Columbus is going to sweep this series, but it would be a major, major, major upset. And speaking of major, I mean, is Tiger Woods the bigger story? I mean, if Columbus beats Tampa, What would be the bigger story? Tiger Woods winning the Masters or Columbus? And I have to filter in some Masters talk here. Because I know you were definitely dialed into that, I'm sure, yesterday. I 100%. Had zero interest in what was going on, but I know that you probably did.
Yeah, I grabbed my oldest son, Nate, and we sat down. We watched the last, I watched all of it. I got up early. They started early because of the rain that was coming in. But I'll tell you, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. It gave me it. Here's the thing. I mean, I'm sure I'm not alone when I say this. It gave me chills. And I don't know the way Tiger felt on the course, because I obviously, it's not just about him hitting the ball and stroking the ball. It was just literally watching his demeanor every single time something happened. I was always watching to see a reaction. And I've never seen a man so focused, so stone cold, and in the moment that, I mean, it is truly amazing. At age 43, I think obviously a 14-year drought since he won his last Masters. It was absolutely amazing to watch. I had chills watching him. Such an incredible, like, when I'm trying to explain this to my son. I feel that Tiger Woods, certainly back, 10, 15 years ago, was the most storied athlete on the planet, in the world. I mean,
there's not one athlete that has ever changed their sport the way he did.
No question.
Like he is, he'll be, for me, like, I know Jack Nicklaus or Nicholson. I know one's an actor, one's a golfer. I get the two confused all the time, but he didn't quite have the same impact. You know, you have so many different athletes and so many different golfers, but Tiger Woods was the only reason why I ever even turned on golf in the 2000s. I can honestly say that.
No question.
There is not, I mean, you know, in basketball, there's Michael Jordan, but there were players before him, you know, that were just as great, or people could argue.
Look
are
at what Wayne
just
Gretzky
great
did to
and
hockey,
after.
Right?
And Wayne Gretzky for hockey.
Going from Edmonton, absolutely, a hockey market, going to LA, where absolutely it was not a hockey market, and Wayne Gretzky changed the face of hockey in the southern United States.
Well,
where
there are teams in San Jose,
there.
Arizona, Vegas, Florida, Tampa Bay
because of Wayne Gretzky.
Period.
I mean, question.
I don't. But I would have to say that there are more athletes around the world playing golf because of Tiger Woods. I mean, if you had to I don't have statistics, and I don't know if there are statistics to support the argument, but I can tell you whether it was Gretzky or Woods who changed their game or grew their game more, Tiger Woods.
Oh, a hundredfold.
Yeah,
I mean, so and to think the disappointing part is obviously going back to 2008 when Tiger was standing on a platform by himself. Nobody in the world of golf could even come close to competing with Tiger. He was stomping on the competition. No one had an answer for him. He was just that dominant. And then obviously, the situation with his personal life derailed, his entire existence.
Well, this is the story I love. This is the story I love. It's not his personal life. It's the comeback. It's the guys like me that said he'll never do it. He'll never win another one. And I wasn't rooting against him. I never rooted against Tiger Woods, but I'll tell you this. I doubted. I thought he's done. He doesn't have a shot at Jack's record. He'll never win another major. I mean, all of this stuff.
Listen, it went from he's got a DWI to he is, painkillers. He was addicted to painkillers. He went through multiple issues with, the divorce of him and his wife and the issues that he had throughout that. He had back issues after surgery after surgery after surgery, and in this time he's only getting older, and we all know you're not the same in your 30s and 40s than you are when you're in your 20s. It's the reality of the beast, and to think that you know, only about three years ago, Tiger started to kind of make a slow comeback. He just wasn't the same. He wasn't hitting the ball the same. He didn't have the same confidence. It wasn't the same Tiger. And I'll tell you right now, even though he wasn't where he used to be, people still want to watch him more than any golfer on the planet. And the last year and a half, you started to see glimpses of the old Tiger.
Yeah, didn't he have like a top five finish at a major last year, the PGA Championship?
That's
or something?
Exactly it. Yeah. And you started to think, I really want this man to do well. I really want this guy to go back. We all, as fans of golf, and people even don't like golf, they tune in on the last day. They want to see if Tiger's there. If he's there, then they're going to watch. If he's not there, they turn off the TV and they move on with their day. But everybody out there that has watched Tiger Woods for all those years want to see him at the pinnacle again, because that's what makes golf enjoyable. To see that black hat and red golf shirt on the final day, that's what brings people to watch. And you know what? I mean, I was sitting on the edge of my seat the entire day. It was absolutely incredible. I had chills, you know, the goosebumps. You know, I was standing up pacing in the kitchen because, you know, he ended up missed a shot, and other guys were now going two strokes up on it. It was an emotional roller coaster, and I wasn't even on. I don't have any skin in the game, but I'm sure there's a lot of people in the same position that I was. And all I got to say is it was absolutely fantastic to see Tiger Woods on top again. He earned it. He deserved it. He was stone cold those last nine holes with how much is going on. Amazing, amazing to watch.
All right. Well, that's Tiger Woods on Sunday. Again, that patented red shirt, black pants. You almost feel like anybody that wears that outfit anywhere, like if you wear a red shirt and black pants, you know, it's called, you know, Tiger on Sunday. It's almost like you're not even allowed to wear it.
And the other thing that I'm thinking too is like, he doesn't have a collar. It's just kind of like the mock t-shirt type thing. And, you know, 90% of
Did he have the silver tip belt though? That's all I want to know. I didn't even see it.
So.
And, you know, I hope he threw that one out, because that was probably what was holding him back. He was trying to hang on to the 90s way too long with the silver tip belt. Moving on, speaking of silver tip belts, I think Nazem Kadri is going to get the belt from the league for his cross check to the head of Jake DeBrusk. Now, I don't know how many people saw this out there the other night, but this was heating up. You saw this coming, and DeBrusk was all over everybody that game, knee on knee with Kadri earlier in the game. Huge hit on Marlowe at the.
Do you think it was a dirty hit?
The knee on knee?
Yes.
Oh, you know, this is the one where I rewound it. And because it was Kadri and it happened so fast, and this is where I really appreciate the speed of the game, is when you pause it and slow it down, you realize how fast the game is really going.
Yep.
And, you know, at first it looks like, Kadri's pulling the chute. He's probably trying to draw a penalty because it's Kadri, and it looks like he's rolling around. And then
Then
you rewind it, and you slowly see the knee into the side of the knee. Now, do I think it was intentional? No, I don't think he moved anything or tried to get out of the way. I think he held his lane, and I think Kadri took the worst end of the contact. But would I say it was intentional? It's hard to tell these days. I mean, do I think it was unintentional? No. Do I think it was deliberate and blatant intent to injure? No. But I think it was somewhere in between. And that's kind of the line that, you know, hockey players like this play on when they try to affect.
Did he get a penalty for it?
I can't remember if he got a penalty for it.
I don't think he got a penalty for it.
No.
If anything, this could have been called a trip. I don't think that he stuck out his knee to go knee on knee with Nazem Kadri. I think that he tried to step into him and knew that he probably wasn't going to be able to get a body on him, so he stuck out his foot a little bit and ended up tripping Kadri. And it's a play that probably should have been called for a tripping penalty, but it wasn't. They missed it. There's no question. But going to the actual incident with Nazem Kadri, who had an absolute fantastic game, absolutely fantastic game, physical, driving the net. He's doing everything that is the Leafs want him to do. But when Patrick Marleau ended up getting smoked by Jake DeBrusk, you have to channel those emotions. And Nazem Kadri, for the second year in a row now, makes a very bad decision that is going to cost his team immensely, because he is a big part of the of this hockey team. He's a big part of the depth of the team. Having Nazem Kadri as your third line center, a guy that scored multi 30 goal season, a guy that plays the game physical, he's great on draws. They are going to miss him, because right now Austin Matthews has forgotten that he's even in the playoffs. We haven't even seen him. He's as lazy as you can possibly get. So now you have Nazem Kadri, who is playing the game right, who's a playoff type player, goes out and does something, and that's going to cost his team big time.
A lot of people have issue with the hit on Marleau. I thought it was a great hit. I think DeBrusk was by far the most effective player on the ice that night. I mean, he was running around. He was hitting. Did you see Boston, the hits in the first period, the physicality? There was one shift where Toronto advanced the puck up the ice, but they moved the puck. Hit was finished. They moved the puck again.
Listen,
up
I'm
the boards.
Tell you this.
The next guy, he got finished. The next guy to receive the puck, he bumped it. Then he got finished. It was like a hit after hit after hit. It was a hit parade.
Here's the thing. But when I was a player, it was the worst time of year. I remember my days when I was in Montreal. We missed the playoffs a few times, and each and every time, you kind of leave where you're playing. You leave Montreal. You go home, and I remember sitting in those chairs by myself. I didn't have any kids at the time, and you know, I'm sitting in that chair, and I'm just furious that I'm not in the playoffs. It made me sick to my stomach. I was angry. There's nothing worse than the final game when the team wins the Stanley Cup and seeing those guys that are so happy and so proud and all the sweat, blood, and tears that they put in to win the ultimate prize. It made me sick to my stomach. I went home and I thought to myself, I need obviously to get better. I need to be more skilled. I need to be faster, bigger, stronger. But you also get to watch how the best teams in the National Hockey League win games. And I hope that the Buffalo Sabres players right now are at home watching all these games. I hope that they're watching the Islanders play Pittsburgh. I hope that they're watching Boston and Toronto. I hope that they're watching Washington and Carolina. I hope that they watch Columbus absolutely beat down the best team in the league through speed and physicality, and they play the game right. I hope they're at home watching this, taking in what can we do better. Yes, you have to get stronger and faster, and those are things that you work on in the off season. But it's how you play the game. And I've said this all along, the Sabres are far, far too soft. They are not a hard team to play against. They play a very light brand of hockey. Yes, we're trying to add more skill to our lineup, but skill is only skill if you don't play the game properly and you don't make it difficult on other teams to play against you. Then I don't care how skilled you are. And when I watch these teams absolutely battle warriors, I watch these teams go to battle with each other. One guy gets hit. There's another guy's coming in. He's got his back. They're playing the game fast. Every check is being finished. Every back check is
well, you see what Columbus is doing? Like, they get the puck in behind Tampa Bay. This is boring. Now, remember, you know, dumping the puck in and running to get it. But if you go and watch how Columbus plays, if they don't have a play to the net, they just chip it down and boom, they go and run guys over. They hit bodies. Same with the Islanders.
And there's not just one
guy.
Same
with Boston.
They go in waves. It's not just one guy by himself. It's waves of guys constantly. They get the puck low.
Pasternak absolutely smoked somebody the other night. Like, smoked somebody. I can't remember who it was. Pasternak charges in and runs a guy over. And I'm like, wait, that's not Pasternak's type of game. I thought he was. There it is.
Yep.
He runs Muzzin over. And it's not just like a little hit. I mean, he absolutely smokes him. Sorry to interrupt your point.
No, absolutely. Like, that's what we're talking about. It's not just It's not just your fourth line guys that are doing it. Everybody is doing it. It's the best players in the game are playing the game right.
Oh, back to the Kadri. I agree with everything you're saying. Listen, and you're right. I hope they're watching too, and that's a great point because they should be seeing how these teams are being successful. But I just want to make one point about that Boston-Toronto game and the referees from the get-go. And I have no skin in the game. Okay, I picked Marner in my pool, and I have I don't even know who I have in my pool on the other side from Boston. I honestly couldn't even tell you. My point is, the referees were awful. From the get-go, there was a blatant interference that wasn't called. There was an elbow to the face that wasn't called. Someone just reminded me about Kadri elbowing DeBrusque earlier in the game after a hit. There were tons and tons of penalties that just weren't called. So that's when I say, you know, if the referees had control of the game, the Kadri incident doesn't happen. Now, you can't control what Kadri goes and does, and I'm not going to condone the love tap that Kadri gave DeBrusque, and I'm kidding when I say that because he's going to get suspended and we'll hopefully come to a conclusion as what we think he'll get from the league. But if the refs have control of that game, I don't think we see the running around and the hitting. You can take control of the game. The knee-on-knee could have been called. The two-hander by Kapanen right after the hit. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I love that Kapanen wants to come in and defend a player, but look at all these scrums. Mark my words, on this day today, I want you to write this down in your book. You put your date down every day. In the next 2 years, that's a long shot, we're going to see somebody lose an eye in one of these scrums. Because if you watch these scrums, what's the one thing you notice? Every single player has their stick in their hands. And I don't care about visors, because once one of those bad boys comes up underneath the visor, someone's going to lose an eye. It's coming. But all I'm saying to you is that the officials need to do a better job of gaining control. The Kadri hit.
How many games are you getting?
We're looking at
minimum five. He has an in-person hearing, so we're looking at five minimum. He's been suspended in 2015 or 2013. He got suspended three games for a hit to the head on Nicholas Backstrom. 2015, he got suspended four games for an illegal check to the head against Matt Fraser. He's been fined $5,000 for inappropriate gesture, a throat slash against Giordano in 16. In March 2016, he got fined $2,000 for diving. 2 weeks later, he got fined $2,000 for diving once again. In 2016, April, suspended four games for a cross check. In 2018, he was suspended in the playoffs last year against Boston, three games for a Bornig on Tommy Wingles. You're in a situation that 1 year removed from that exact incident, he cross checked a player in the face. He's looking at minimum five. So what are we looking at moving forward for Nazem Kadri?
For what?
I have him at six. I have him at six games. They could.
I think his suspension last year was I think because of his value to that team. I think it was what hurt Toronto the most. Now, they didn't lose the series while he was out. If I recall, he came back and ended up playing, I think, with Game 7. Mm-hmm. But this is going to hurt Toronto again. Again. I mean,
immensely.
I would, you know, what are they, two games into the series? You boot him for five games, and he's back for the next series if they're able to get past this series. Now, that Boston team the other night looked like the Boston team that we expected to see in Game 1 that we didn't see. Yep. And that was a bit of a wake-up call. That loss in Game 1 might have been the best thing that happened to Boston and worst thing that happened to Toronto. Five games minimum. I mean, you called it in-person hearing. What does this mean from going forward? You know, because the Leafs have all this cap issue, you know, and you wonder if this could be, if they end up losing this series and he's out of the lineup and he's one of their big time players, is this a great excuse for them to move him so you can open up cap space for somebody else? Not a guy that I would want to trade if I were Toronto, but do you not care about, you know, the fan base and popularity in terms of Nazem Kadri and antics?
Well, if you're looking to, if we're going there, And Nazem Kadri is he's already been suspended four times in his NHL career. He's been fined three times in his career, and now this is going to be another suspension that's going to be five games plus. He could be anywhere from, I think he's going to be anywhere from 5 to 10. He'll be in there. I probably put him at around 6.
Well, they value playoff games more than a regular season game.
Yes, that's so, why I'm saying 6.
So is it like what? Value what? 1 to 3? So if you give him a 3-game suspension, it's worth 9. If you give him 5, it's 15. Is that how they do the math? Maybe 2 to 1?
Yeah, something along that line. But you bring up a great point. At what point in time does Toronto Maple Leafs start to look at moving forward with what they have? You have to understand, they're a team that does not have a first-round draft pick this year. That hurts.
You could get them that, maybe.
You know, you have John Tavares making $11 million. You have Nylander that is going to be making $7 million. Patrick Marleau is going to be making $6.25 million. You have Austin Matthews making $11.6 million. And they still have to go out. They have to sign Kasper Kapanen, who's going to be making, what, $3-5 million, and Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner right now is putting himself in a situation, and everybody seems to be, you know, when you hear and listen about Mitch Marner with 94 points this year, has he priced himself right out of Toronto? How does he take a dime less than Austin Matthews?
This is where the offer sheet conversation comes in. I don't think it's an unpopular thought. If there's one team that would, you know, teams or GMs or anybody, fans included, would love to screw over, it would be the Toronto Maple Leafs.
But can you have three guys that make $11 million? Can you have three guys on one team making $11
million? The Hawks never won with Kane and Taves making 10 and a half. They got those deals after their third cup.
That's right.
So I don't know if you can win. I don't know if you can win with three guys taking up $33 million bucks of your salary cap. And that's going to be hard to do, and it's going to be hard to find guys to stay for, bargain prices. Other things we have to talk about. Alain Vigneault has been Philadelphia's requested to talk to Alain Vigneault, so there's got to be other teams on the list. Is Buffalo on that list? We have to talk about coaching search, because McClellan is no longer in the mix here in Buffalo, so who else could it be? And where the hell is Sidney Crosby? Penguins down 3-0 against the Islanders. We'll talk about the greatest player to ever play when we return and where he's been. Lots more playoff talk, too, coming up. Instigators. Bandits coming in at 11:30 as well. Some Bandit talk. WGR 550 and MSG.
We're back with more of the Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rabe.
Welcome back. Coach Watch, coaching search going on here in Buffalo and a lot of other teams in the league, too. Reports that the Philadelphia Flyers asked the New York Rangers to talk to Alain Vigneault for the head coaching position. You have to expect other teams are going to ask permission to talk to him. Only one team so far. Are we to assume, Craig, that the Sabres will ask to speak to Alain Vigneault? And I guess the question is, do they even need permission? I'm sure Botts has already talked to him about Team Canada. I mean, don't you just throw the old little, and if you want to get back into coaching, call me.
Yeah, I would think.
If that's not allowed, then let's assume it didn't.
I would think Alain Vigneault has had some sort of discussion with Jason Botterill. There's no question. He's a 16-year head coach that has a pretty amazing track record. I'm sure Jason Botterill is talking to a lot of people. I mean, he is. He's got to do his due diligence on each and every one of these coaches to see if the chemistry between GM and coach can be made. He's got to do a lot of talking, got to do a lot of figuring out personalities, what the thoughts are of these coaches, and these things take time. It's not going to be done overnight.
Yeah, I would have loved McClellan. I mean, to be honest with you, but did it make sense? I mean, because of he's always been in the West, and I was even thinking, I'm like, you know, if we ever got a chance to talk to him, if he signed as the new coach and bring him on the show, I probably would have said, strange to see you in these parts. Like you've always been in the Western Conference, even back when he was with Detroit. I think Detroit was in the West when he was there. They had to have been because they just switched to the East four or five years ago, and he was. He would have been in San Jose then. So, you know, he went from Detroit in the West to San Jose in the West to Edmonton in the West. And then, you know, the rumors L.A., which makes sense because it's in the West. In fact, the last three teams, if he signs with L.A., would be that Pacific Division. So you almost think the familiarity that he has with that division might be why, you know, he might think he has an upper hand. But I don't know the thoughts or the rhyme or reason behind going back to LA or whatever, but the coach search is interesting, and Alain Vigneault's been in the discussion. I think just because when you talk about maybe what the Sabres might be looking for, reputation and all this stuff, and presence, and I don't want to use the word intimidation, but fiery, a little more fiery. I mean, you know Alain Vigneault, played for him, so I mean. I would be excited if they hired Alain Vigneault, but there are other guys on the list, and are there guys off the list? And did what Darren Dreger said has been sitting in my head since Friday.
Okay.
Do you remember what he said?
Nope.
Head out to the ranch, throw a saddle on the horse, go find Daryl Sutter, and bring him here for a couple few years, bring Chris Taylor up as the assistant.
Yep.
So you go from establishing Tails as a head coach in the minors, you bring him up to establish his presence in the locker room as an assistant coach.
Yep.
And then when Daryl Sutter's ready to walk away from the game again and go raise some more Alberta beef,
yep.
then Tails slides right into that spot. You keep Steve Smith.
He's going to be the tutelage. He's going to teach in that scenario. You're bringing in Sutter. You're
not my idea, by the way. My idea was Marty.
Marty brought that up. I'm not sure if... the cattle farmer is going to be wanting to come to Buffalo to change the lifestyle. I think, he's coached a lot in this league, played the game a very long time. And, I'm not sure if he's the type of coach that wants to walk into a situation with what we are here in Buffalo, where there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of development that needs to happen. The GM has a tough task ahead of him to try and build and form this team into being a more complete team. There's a lot that has to happen here. It's not going to happen overnight. And I'm just not sure that's the type of gig that Sutter would want. You agree?
I don't know. I honestly, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I could see and understand Daryl Sutter having those feelings. Me, on the other hand, is, I don't know, make him come here. How do you do that, right?
Money.
Is that what he even needs? I mean, you look for the right coach, and you honestly think you don't want to force a guy to come back. Well, you're never going to force a guy like Daryl Sutter out of retirement to come back and coach. But, I mean, if you're going to go get a guy like that, he's got to be all in, right? I mean, he's got to want to do it, and he's got to want to change. But what about Todd Richards? I mean, who are some of these other guys that we could be, targeting? And not only that, if Pittsburgh goes out in the first round in three, do they maybe fire their coach and move on from him? And do you look at him? I mean, could that be the case? Are there coaches that are maybe on the block in the playoffs right now? Because what's the guy's name in Pittsburgh right now? Sullivan?
Sullivan, yep. Mike's.
He'd be unbelievable, wouldn't he?
Yes, he would. Yes, he would. This takes time. This takes time. This is a big, big decision that is going to be made by Jason Bottrell. He has to get this right for the organization and most importantly for the players in that locker room. They need a coach that understands exactly where he wants to take this team and how he's going to guide them, the structure that's going to be implemented. And it's not just the structure on the ice. It's the structure in which these guys come to work every day. It's the structure in which these guys are prepared to do the extra, to work on things above and beyond what other teams are doing, to try and really implement the entire, we talk about, you know, the atmosphere in which teams come to the rink. It's very important that you have a guy that has structure, and he is going to implement his system. He's going to teach these young players and the older players to exactly what he wants. And it's, like I said, it's not just on the ice. It's how you're going to treat this job with the utmost professionalism and make sure that everybody is on the same page. And within that, you start to build the relationship with the coaching staff, the relationships within your teammates, and you start to care for them more because you're all vying for one common goal, and that's to win the Stanley Cup. And these things take time to implement these things, and you have to have the right leader. You have to have the right leader. It's very important.
Rivs rapid recap. We got to get into that because a lot we missed talking about around the league and the playoffs. Dane Smith going to join us at 11:30 from the Bandits, talk about his season and Bandits getting ready to roll into the final game of the season. Our final home game of the season coming up this weekend. So Riv's rapid recap. Where's it got the? Listen to this open, Riv. Check out the new video. Keep an eye out for the new video that we're going to be doing. It's a very Top Gun-ish kind of video. Riv's and I playing beach volleyball in our jeans and our dog tags against Marty and Duffer. And it's 2-on-2 on the beach in California, just like Maverick and Goose. Who plays beach volleyball in their jeans, eh? I mean, come on. Hey, you guys want to pull over, play a quick game of volleyball? All right, so let's talk. Riv's rapid recap. Let's get through these pretty quickly here. How will the playoffs change the offseason plans for the Lightning and the Penguins? Because both look to be, not look to be, they're on the brink of a sweep. Whether they get swept, both their seasons are over.
Well, you have Tampa Bay that's going to be in a situation, a tough situation. They have they're like a few teams in the league that they have a restricted free agent in Braden Point, who had an absolutely incredible year this year, and now they have to try and fit him under their salary cap. That is not going to be easy. I mean, you have a Nikita Kucherov who's going to be making $9.5 million. You have to try and figure out how you can fit everything under the cap. And if Braden Point goes to sign in Tampa Bay, is he going to sign for more than Nikita Kucherov, who just signed a $9.5 million per year season?
Probably
no,
not.
No, he is not. He's not going to come anywhere close to that. So, you know, what is his market away from Tampa Bay? That's the question you have to ask. And they have to try and come to an agreement. And it is not going to be, it's not going to be easy. There already have a multitude of players that are highly paid. And I just don't see how Tampa Bay is going to be able to do this with a Steve Stamkos making 8.5, Callahan's making 5.8, Palat's making 5.3, JT Miller's making 5.2, Johnson's making 5. Kucherov's going to make 9.5. Killorn's making 4.5. Yanni Gourde's making 5.1. And they haven't even got to one of their most important players, and that's Braden Point. Not to mention that they're going to be losing 5 unrestricted free agent defensemen in Strawman, Colburn, Dan Girardi, Ruda, and Gantz. They are in a very tough situation cap-wise, and I don't know what they're going to do. I think they're going to have to move guys out to be able to bring in a young Braden Point, and that's going to disrupt their team for the future.
Which pending unrestricted free agent playing in the playoffs should the Sabres pursue? Jordan Eberle, you know, there was talks about the Oilers trading Jordan Eberle because they were concerned about his playoff production.
Yeah.
Is especially hilarious considering they haven't sniffed the playoffs since then anyway. That was from Dimitri Filipovic.
Yeah. I mean,
Filipovic.
This is going to be Jason Bottrell's opportunity to keep a very close eye on what a lot of teams are going to be doing this year. So you have a Winnipeg that has to sign a Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, Jacob Trouba, a Kevin Hayes, who they traded a first-round draft pick for, Tyler Myers, Tanev, and a Shabbat. I mean, they don't have the money to sign all these players. So one of these players is going to be available, or a current player that's actually on their team now could be moved out because of the salary. I always look at the Islanders. I look at a Brock Nelson, who's had a really, really nice playoff. He plays as a second-line center on the New York Islanders. He's had a fantastic season with 25 goals and 53 points, plus 20. He's a big guy at 6 foot two, 6 foot three. And he's the ripe age of, I think, 27 years old. This is a guy that is an unrestricted free agent. Maybe someone that Jason Botterill feels that he can fit in the second line position to give him that strength down the middle. So he's always an option. This is a guy right here who raises an eyebrow for me. And it only raises an eyebrow if this happens. We've all heard of Panarin wanting to test the market, and what team continuously comes up?
Florida
Panthers. He loves the Russian players love to be either in the hot weather, or they like to be in the big cities like New York. But Florida Panthers is a team that has really been interested in Artemi Panarin. And in order to bring in an Artemi Panarin to Florida, they would have to move out salary. And one guy in particular that I believe would be available if they felt that would be a Mike Hoffman. Now, Mike Hoffman this year is making $5.25 million. He scored 36 goals and had 70 points. He could be a guy that the Sabres might pounce on in order to strengthen their left side, because they need strength there.
Okay, I had a funny joke.
I could go back to Matt Duchene, Columbus Blue Jackets. Matt Duchene, is that someone that could be of interest to Jason Botterill? I know that you're going to have to pay him a lot of money, but he's a pretty talented hockey player. He would make our team a stronger hockey team immediately. I always wonder about Vegas Golden Knights. Vegas Golden Knights is another team that is going to start to get themselves into a situation that they're paying guys. They're bringing in the Max Pacioretty's for $7 million. They're bringing in a Stastny for $6.5-$7 million. They're bringing in now Mark Stone that's going to be making $9.5 million. They have younger players that are going to want to get paid, and one of those guys is William Karlsson. And where does he fit in the mix in Vegas for their future? And, you know, if that's something that they get into cap trouble, which they're moving towards that situation, you can't keep all these players. So some of these players are going to be available. And you just wonder, you know, we have the Colorado to offer up first rounders and prospects. It's going to be a very, very interesting draft this year. I think there's going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing, and I think that Jason Botterill is a pretty smart man. He knows the landscape of what's out there, and he's obviously making phone calls to see what teams and how they're thinking and how they're trying to manage their cap, because a lot of these teams are in cap trouble.
Last one, which pending RFA is playing their way to the biggest payday between Laine, Kyle Connor, Tkachuk, Aho, Point, or Marner? And they're all going to be rich.
Okay, what did you just say here?
Which pending RFA? So which one of those RFAs is going to make the most money?
Well, the player that's going to make the least amount of money, I would say, and I'll tell you.
That wasn't the question. Oh, you're going process of elimination?
Process of elimination. So Kyle Connor, I absolutely love this player. He scored 31 goals last year, 34 this year. He scored 66 points. He is not only a goal scorer, he's not only has the ability to make plays, but let me tell you, this guy is fast and he is extremely tenacious. When I say that, he is on the puck, and I love this player. I would if I had to pick the two of them, I would take Kyle Connor over Patrick Laine. And Patrick Laine is going to score you more goals. He is going to get you more goals in the long run. But I think that Kyle Connor is a player that absolutely rounds out your lineup. How this player, he's a game breaker. He's been a point producer through college and obviously in the NHL. I absolutely love him, but he's going to be the lowest paid out of all of these players. Kyle Connor probably will put himself in somewhere around a $7 million range, maybe a tad more than that. Patrick Laine, you're looking at anywhere between $9 and $10 million. Daniel Tkachuk is, Matthew Tkachuk is, he's got to be in the $9 million range. Aho is going to be probably in the $10 million range. Point.
Crazy.
Point's going to be, because of their team structure, there's nobody's going to make more than Nikita Kucherov. So immediately, is he going to make more than Stamkos at 8.5? So he'll probably fit in between the 8.5, $9.5 million range of those two players. And the last one, Mitch Marner. I think Mitch Marner will make more than all of them. I think Mitch Marner is a game breaker. He's for the most part, when he came into the league, he was the behind the scenes player behind Austin Matthews. And I'll tell you right now, I think he's the face of this franchise right now. And I think he's slowly but surely taking that away from Austin Matthews. Take nothing away from Austin Matthews. He is an absolutely brilliant hockey player himself.
In the regular
Mitch
season.
Mitch Marner, without question, is the face of this franchise. He does everything. And I believe that he'll be an $11 million player.
Matthews is a solid fourth liner in the playoffs. I'll give you that.
I'll tell you, I picked him in my pool, and he hasn't done one diddly darn in the playoffs. He needs to have a reality check, because he's just floating around waiting for everybody to do the work, and then he's going to pounce in and skate down the ice and score. But that's not what you need in the playoffs. You need the guys to play the game right, and he needs to pick up his game. And I'll tell you right now, if he doesn't, they are going to get absolutely smoked by the Boston Bruins in the next game, because without Kadri, that is a big loss in that center position.
There was a rookie sensation goaltender made his pro debut yesterday, and one, we'll talk about him. I'm sure Riv has no clue who I'm talking
about.
Yes,
I do.
And I was just delivered on a silver platter a great name to discuss for a coaching candidate. We have not discussed him. I'll tell you who that is, not next, but at 11 o'clock right here on the Instigators, WGR 550 and MSG. Stick around.
Hockey talk that hits. This is the Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rabe.
Welcome back. I mentioned going to break. Young goaltender made his pro debut and won 32 saves. His name, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, and he is showing no signs of slowing down. Ever since the Sabres drafted him, and then he ends up going to Sudbury, he dominates in Sudbury. Now he's, you know, turning pro, and they insert him into a game where they decide to rest some players, and he goes out and wins. And a lot of people have said that he could be the potential future of in goal for the Sabres. I mean, I don't know enough about scouting goalies and understanding potential with goaltenders, but I'm just listening to what the experts say and where they project this kid to be. And it's exciting. I mean, it's exciting to know that you have a kid like that in your system. He'll be in Roch next year, I would imagine.
I'll tell you this, you know, we have our expert right here on this show, and that's Marty Biron. And, you know, we've not really discussed too much about Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, but that being said, you know, he had a choice at the start of this year. He had a choice to go back and play in the Finnish Elite League, which is a heck of a hockey league, but probably at the age of 20, probably wouldn't have played as many games as he would have liked. So he probably would have been the backup to the veteran goaltender. So he would have played in maybe 10 to 15 games if he was lucky, because they only play about 40 over there. He made the decision to come over here at 19 years of age and play in the OHL in Sudbury. And he got to play 60 starts this year and was absolutely phenomenal.
53 starts.
And he got to play a lot of hockey this year. in a very solid league, and he really, really had a fantastic season. I'm sure the Sabres, looking at this young player, drafted, what, second round, I think he was drafted in, they're looking at him and the size and his abilities and how great his season was in junior hockey, now getting the opportunity of finishing junior hockey and being called up to Rochester so they can go on their playoff run. It's just to be around the pro hockey, to be around those men, that this is their jobs. They're all working towards one common goal. That's obviously to have team success in the playoffs this year. But each and every player on that team, they're looking to make that step to the National Hockey League. And to be in that environment for a young goaltender like Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is going to be very beneficial, because most likely he is going to be a goaltender that's going to be in Rochester starting next year. And I would think that he would probably be the starter.
6'5", 212. How long till he's in Buff? I mean, he's 20.
I think most goaltenders in the path that they usually take, I would think that he would be in the minors for at least 2 years or a couple years, depending on how well he continues to mature in his game. He's going to go from playing in Finland to coming over here to play in the OHL, which he dominated.
And Sudbury's the same as Finland, so it's not like he's changing the climate too much.
Yes, absolutely. You're talking Northern Ontario.
He must have landed there and been like, this is just like home.
I'm not kidding you. I've been in Finland 4 times, and Finland's very much like Northern Ontario. So when he went to Sudbury, he didn't have to get climatized. It was very much like what he's used to. And he dominated in Sudbury. Now he's going to go to play pro hockey, and he's going to have the opportunity to show and develop against men and against some of the best players in the world. And if he continues to develop the way he is, you might see him in a Buffalo lineup sooner than later.
All right, when we come back, who will be the coach of that Buffalo lineup sooner than later? We don't know that just yet, but somebody tweeted an idea. And you know what? I'm never opposed to bringing good ideas or terrible ideas on the air, so you can tweet me either one. I'm at TheInstigator76. He's at CraigRevay52. And we'll be right back. Sports update, and then 11 o'clock hour, Bandits coming up. Dane Smith, Josh Byrne, right here at 11:30, WGR 550 and MSG.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.